Welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
I am Baron Lewis.
And I am his monstrous creation, Ian.
I'm not sure I can keep this up.
My voice is going there. Welcome to our Halloween special.
We've got a very special podcast for you today. It's a Halloween double bill.
A Halloween double bill indeed. Yeah, I just realised we've still got the creepy music on, haven't we?
It's fine, we'll keep it going. We'll keep it in the background. It's great.
With our sprightly, lovely voices.
I should return to this one.
Yeah, do that the whole podcast.
I tell you one thing I did realise doing this podcast, and let's blow it, let's knock out those films out of there right now. We're going to do Frankenstein, The Bride of Frankenstein, the Universal Frankenstein double bill.
So if you like Frankenstein, your quid's in.
Yeah, oh, it's Frankenstein upped today. I'm really good at doing impressions of the monster.
You are very good. I was well impressed. That's very good. You look a bit like him as well, with your big flat head.
Yeah, my bolts. And I could almost do quite a good one of Frankenstein himself,
couldn't I?
All right. I've got to get into character.
Okay.
It's alive! It's alive! Can't you see?
That's very good. I'm very impressed. I'm genuinely impressed.
Thank you.
So anyway, today we're in a special studio today. We're in Ian's special dungeon.
Well, it's less of a dungeon, more of a sex attic.
So we're surrounded by the usual whips and chains.
Of course. You've never commented on them before.
Well, I just don't even notice them anymore.
Yes, yeah, we're over in Studio One.
Studio One.
One today, yeah, and for the first time in a long time, it's like a homecoming.
Yeah,
this is where it all started. This is where the magic first happened. And now we're back here to capture that magic.
Exactly.
For Halloween itself.
Exactly.
Have you been up to anything scary recently, Lewis?
Well, I dressed up as the Crow. Does that count?
A Crow.
No, the Crow. Well, the Crow.
That's weird. I had a flashback to a previous podcast. Have I made that joke before?
Probably.
Have I said something about a crow?
We must be repeating ourselves by now.
I don't know. You did dress up as the Crow.
Yeah, went down quite well.
It did. I dressed up as Sean from Shaun of the Dead.
That was a good costume.
Yeah, well, yours is too.
God, this is like a loving or something. No, I love you.
I didn't say that. I was just talking about costumes. Anything? Have you seen any scary films?
Well, I watched The Crow, obviously, to get into character.
Oh, you did, didn't you? Yeah.
90s-tastic. I haven't seen it since probably the 90s sometimes.
So. You know, I've got a funny thing. I've not seen it.
We might have to do it.
Really? The Crow?
It's good fun.
Is it?
It is good fun. Although we have already done one Alex Proyas film in Dark City. So.
Yeah, I think that's enough. That's enough for one 101 film collection, isn't it? So, Frankenstein. How do they pronounce it, young Frankenstein? Frankenstein, isn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah, now, I had seen the first Frankenstein.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen either, although I've seen quite a few clips from it over the years.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Jungle Book in that respect. I remember when I first saw Jungle Book as a kid, I'd sort of seen more or less all of it, just through clips on Disney Time.
Oh, okay.
And I kind of came out and go, yeah.
I was wondering how you're going to compare Frankenstein to the Jungle Book.
Well, both feature a lost soul. And that's where really it ends.
And?
And he wants to be like a man.
Okay.
Yeah. It's coming. No,
that's about it.
That's
yeah.
it, yeah.
They build a bride out of leftover animals.
cadavers. Yeah. Shall we do the pitch?
The pitch, yeah. What's the pitch?
Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I imagine that was the pitch.
Yeah, the prequel to The Monsters.
Now, apparently, James Whale was offered, I think it's about 50 different books he could turn into films.
Right.
And he picked this one.
Really?
Yeah, he picked Frankenstein. Mm. So this film, of course, is part of the canon of Universal Horrors.
Mm-hmm.
Boris Karloff as the monster. Up there with Bela Lugosi as Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Lane Chaney.
Long John Chaney.
Long John Chaney as the Wolfman. Claude Rains as the Invisible Man.
Oh, Claude Rains. How can we forget Claude? I'd forgotten about Claude Rains.
I was going to say, I hadn't forgotten about it. I just said his name.
Okay. I'd forgotten about Claude Rains.
How could you forget about Claude Rains? He is invisible. So I guess that makes it quite easy to forget. And, yeah, when you close your eyes and you think of Frankenstein, that's the picture you see.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen the Hammer Horror Frankenstein, and great film. And to be honest, I think I prefer it to the Universal one. I really love Peter Cushing as the Baron in it.
Mm.
But you asked me to draw a picture of the monster, played by Christopher Lee. I couldn't. It's just kind of like a mishmash thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, right now I could sit down and jot down what Frankenstein from these films looks like. It's so iconic.
It definitely is. It's entered popular culture. Everyone just thinks of it like this. Yeah, in the original book he was described as having kind of yellow, translucent skin, a kind of bald head, you know.
I mean, that's the look they used in Kenneth Branagh's.
Yeah, that's right, with Robert De Niro.
Isn't that supposed to be terrible?
It's not great.
Yeah. I mean,
for a start, Robert De Niro is about 5 foot tall.
Yeah, so that's true, yeah.
I don't know why they thought he'd be a good pick to play an 8 foot monster. But there we go.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. that's well, you had your hand up, like, yeah, that was point one.
I was trying
so it looked like there was gonna another point was to come, but no, you just had your thumb up.
Right. Well, I suppose the point I was going to make was that the remake is a lot closer to the actual book. They call it Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, didn't they?
Robert De Niro, they do.
Whereas this film,
just like Bram Stoker's Dracula, that was a kind of thing going around at the time.
Exactly. But for Frankenstein, the 1931 film, they deviate wildly from the actual book.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, why not?
Why not, I say. So what do you think of the films now you've seen them? Well, I suppose you've seen one already.
Yeah, I saw Frankenstein. My opinion was pretty much what I thought it would be, to be honest. An interesting curio. With moments of, you know, proper drama and intrigue and something that would draw me in. But a lot of the time it's quite hard going.
Yes.
Well, not hard going, that's the wrong word. It's just a bit dull. It's not
true.
Aged greatly.
It's very
especially
slow.
Especially the first one.
Yeah. The first one is very slow. There's so much in the book. And there's a huge amount of development of the character of the monster, which is missing entirely from the film. It was just a fairly one-dimensional character. But in the sequel, it changes.
Yeah, and I think in the first one, even though you're right, the monster doesn't have any lines other than...
That's good.
Yeah. that's all he says. But the way Boris Karloff plays him, just the way his actions, and it's all kind of, despite the fact under all that makeup, it's in the eyes, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's in the kind of just the sadness and the loneliness that he portrays the monster as having, makes a character of it.
Mm.
When in someone else's hands, there would have been nothing to it.
Yeah, definitely.
I suppose all these, someone like Boris Karloff, he was 44, I think, when he did Frankenstein. So he would have been around in the silent era.
Mm.
So well used to acting without words.
Yeah.
You know, what did you think?
To be honest, I didn't really like the first one very much at all.
No.
There's some great bits in it. The bits where the monster comes alive is a great little scene.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you just watch that little bit, you think, wow, this is great. But there's far too many kind of long bits of dialogue that don't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
And, it's not aged well.
I think about 15 minutes in, you were just like, nothing's happened.
Yeah, I know. It's a horror film. It's like the dullest horror film ever.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, it's of its time. But then you cut to the sequel and it's...
Four years later.
And what a change.
The pace is just so much faster.
So much happens in the film.
Yeah.
Compared to the first one. So much happens.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, like, I was like, my God, we've not even seen The Bride of Frankenstein yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's like 5 minutes left.
Exactly. You know, the monster learns to speak, he runs away, gets captured, escapes again. You know, it's just like non-stop rollercoaster. They introduce like loads
new
more
villain.
Characters,
yeah,
new villain.
Yeah.
You know, it's... I do actually think it's a good film. I would watch it again.
Yeah. Shall we go on the trivia quiz?
Yes.
Trivia quiz!
Now, I don't know about you, Lewis, but I was disappointed by the first film by one important fact.
Mm-hmm.
Baron, oh, he's actually not a baron, isn't it? He's just Frankenstein.
Mm.
His assistant isn't called Igor.
Yes.
What is his name?
Ah, I know this. Fritz.
Fritz, that is correct, yes. Well done.
Yeah, why? And they changed his name as well, because he's Victor Frankenstein in the book. And
yes,
he becomes Henry.
Yeah. They saw his best friend is called Henry in the book, and he becomes Victor.
Strange.
Yeah, but they did that in the remake of, well, when we watched the Hammer Horror Dracula.
Yeah, that's right.
And they just
right.
swapped some of the character names around for some reason.
Weird.
I don't know why they do that. Yeah. Obviously, someone's like, Victor, no, that ain't a good name.
Is this Bert Humpledink the First?
Yeah, he's back. Oh, I'm like the man of a million voices today. Okay, question two. The monster was originally supposed to have a name. What was that name?
No, don't know, sorry.
You don't know?
Fred.
Jeff. Jeff. Oh, actually, if you think about it, it's quite an obvious name. He's the first of a new race of man, so his name is...
Prometheus?
Adam.
Oh.
But I didn't use that in the end. I can imagine why.
Hey, Adam.
Adam! Dinner! Yeah, that kind of thing. Okay, and question three. What piece of mythology did the film add to the process of the monster's creation?
Ah, was this the use of electricity, like the electric storm?
Yes, correct. Before that, it's actually not stated in the book how the monster's created.
Yeah, I think
it says something like, I don't want to say it, just so people can't recreate it.
Yeah, which is a nice little gimmick there.
Yeah. Clever. Mary, very clever.
Good one, Mary. Okay, my questions. What? Question one. Where was Boris Karloff from?
Oh, right.
Where was he born and where did he grow up?
Okay.
Not from the name, not somewhere you'd think would be obvious.
Right, okay. Well, I'm going to hazard a guess. I'm going to say the UK.
Yes, you're right. Can I press you for a city?
Oh, God. That's going to be... All right.
I'll give you the point, but I'm interested.
Manchester.
No, it's London, actually.
Oh, okay.
He was actually born in Honor Oak and grew up in Enfield.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Changed his name to Boris Karloff.
Is there a statue of him there?
There's a blue plaque in Honor Oak.
God, there should be a statue of him in the full makeup there. That's annoying.
There might be. I don't know. Who knows? But his real name was William Henry Pratt.
No.
Question two. Where did Mary Shelley write the story? In that famous meeting with Lord Byron and Percy Shelley.
Oh, where? Okay.
It's shown at the beginning of Bride of Frankenstein.
Yes, it is. It's in Europe, isn't it?
It's in Europe, yeah.
Is it Italy?
Oh, close.
Spain? Italy? Greece?
No, it's in Geneva in Switzerland.
Oh, of course, Geneva!
And last question. This is actually quite a hard one.
Oh, great.
So I'll give you a plus or minus one on this.
Right, okay.
How many times does Henry Frankenstein say, "It's alive," in the first film?
Five times?
No, it's actually eight times in a row. Eight times. That was quite a hard one.
That was a hard one. Okay.
So well, you got one out of three.
And you got two. So you win unfairly.
What? Those were good questions.
Actually, I had my fourth backup question, just in case you had one of mine, was a question about probably our favourite character of the entire two films, the maid, Minnie, I think her name is. Minnie
is
the maid.
Got a name?
I think it's Minnie. Okay. Yeah, and she's played by Una O'Connor.
Oh right.
And who was a fantastic character actress from that period.
Yeah, she was funny, wasn't she? I mean,
she made the film straight away. She was kind of like the big difference between the two films.
So to clarify, that she was in Bride of Frankenstein
and not the first Frankenstein. And I think one of the first Frankenstein has moments of melodrama, but it's played totally straight. The second one is almost a comedy.
It's like a pantomime, really.
Yeah, well. And she really kind of sets the tone right from the beginning. She's right there, like they straight away because they take the last scene. The film picks up from basically the last scene of the first film, and they insert her into that last scene. No,
but the first unbelievable. Burning's too good for him. It's like Monty Python or something.
Oh, the fire's down there. That's what it is. It's still firing it. Still got stuff to burn. Yeah, it's mad.
It is mad.
And
it,
then she,
and we're not making this up. This is just what it's like.
And you think, okay, she's this is going to be just a little side character right at the beginning. No, she's pretty much in the entire film. Right the way through.
It was so strange. She's so jarring whenever she appears. But also there's some sort of a subtle brilliance to her. Well, not subtle.
No, it's not subtle. But she works, I would say. Yeah. She made us laugh every time. The way she walked as well. That kind of real little old lady walk going...
It was like she was always paid. If she acted more, she'd get paid more.
Yeah. She was paid by the for every elaborate double take.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it has a moment where kind of like the monster climbs out of the wreck of the burnt windmill, and she sort of he creeps up on her. I would say about this about the monster: it's amazing how he can creep up on people.
He's very stealthy,
isn't he? For a big lad, no one seems to notice him walking along.
I know, it's amazing the amount of times people just turn around and he's right there. It's like, wow, he must have special kind of soft cushions on his massive size 20s.
Well, it's mad because I think those shoes weighed like £13 each in real life. So he's doing well for creeping around in those shoes. So yeah, so Una's great. But what do you think about the rest of the cast? Colin Clive playing the Baron. Oh, he's not the Baron though, is he, in the first film?
No, he's plain old Henry Frankenstein.
Yeah, Henry Frankenstein to be the Baron.
Yeah. I think he's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
I think he's, particularly, I mean, in the standout scene, the It's Alive scene. But all the way through, I think he's pretty good. Some of the other characters, though. Elizabeth.
In
the first film.
Yeah.
Now, she is possibly one of the most wooden actresses I've ever seen.
Yeah, she's not great.
And
it's not that surprising they changed her for the second film.
No, it was like when the Bride Frankenstein started and we saw Elizabeth had suddenly become a brunette and changed her face. We're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, because that was quite awkward. That was quite hard going.
Yeah.
The guy who played Victor's best friend as well. Sorry, Henry's best friend.
Yeah.
Victor.
Not so good, was it?
No, really wasn't. He was very wooden as well.
Also, at the beginning of the second film, there's that meeting of Percy Shelley and Mary Shelley and Lord Byron.
Yeah.
Lord Byron. I mean, I'm not quite sure what's going on with Lord Byron. Again, I think he's being paid by how much he acts. But it was weird. He kind of started off with a British accent and then kind of went heavily American and then seemed to remember he was British again. And it was just strange.
He also makes the cardinal sin of referring to the monster as Frankenstein.
Does he?
Yeah, he says, like, and you created that monstrous Frankenstein. I suppose you could say that he might be referring monstrous. To Frankenstein himself, but no, he's referring to the monster.
One other standout character, I think, is probably Baron, the old Baron Frankenstein in the first film. Yeah. Now, that was weird. It was like, there was one point, I turned to you, didn't I? I said, do you think he's just making this up? Because he just kind of...
To be fair, actually thinking about it, he almost takes the role that the maid takes in the second one. Yeah, he's a kind of almost comic relief. And the whole... Yeah, like he has moments, he's like... Oh, 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 oh.
Yeah, he just potters around the stage. What are you doing down there, lad? Come on, come up here. What's this? It's a step. I'm going to step up this step.
Yeah. I'm not happy with it. Not happy about it, but I'm going to bloody do it. Yeah, that kind of thing. I'd say, actually, who I think is probably other than Boris himself as the monster, and which is a great performance, we'll come on to that in a minute. I think it's in the second film, Professor Pretorius.
Oh, yes, Professor Pretorius.
Professor
Pretorius.
He's very good, isn't he? Professor Pretorius? Pretorius? They do say his name about four times. Just to make sure that we know.
What was your name again?
Pretorius?
Dr. Pretorius?
But he's very devilish, isn't he?
He's good, isn't he? He's got that really pointy nose.
Yeah.
And it's like his wrinkles are almost like they're drawn on, aren't they? They're so deep.
Well, there probably was a little bit of makeup there, wasn't there?
But yeah, it was... yeah, he's very good.
He's like a proper out-and-out villain. Which is actually one of the interesting things I found about this film. Sort of seeing the Hammer horror versions first, and I've sort of forgotten in this one. In the Hammer horror versions of the film, the Baron is just a complete bastard. Peter Cushing plays him as an out-and-out evil man, a scientist with no computations about doing horrific things, simply to further his own knowledge, his own lust for power. Whereas the Frankenstein in these films is kind of portrayed as quite a weak character.
Mm.
Doesn't seem to have much control over himself.
It's true, yeah. And again, it's quite different from the book. In the book, he was a kind of obsessed scientist that, you know, he went to these extremes because he was in the pursuit of this ultimate scientific goal that he wanted to find. And then when he actually made his creation, he was repulsed by it and realised what he'd done.
Mm.
And, you know, fled and, you know, tried to completely forget about the whole thing. But then the monster starts killing people associated with him and comes after him, and he realizes that his actions are have caused the death of other people. So he actually feels a great guilt and goes after and tries to kill the monster.
Yeah.
There's also a bit about the creator Bride.
Oh, well, really?
In the original novel, funny enough. So although it sounds like a really cheesy...
It's taking drawing on elements from
it. It is drawing on elements from the novel, but they don't actually do it in the...
No, But in the film, Frankenstein just seems to get away with it scot-free, doesn't he?
He does, jammy sod, isn't
he? Yeah, like, he escapes the end of the film, doesn't die. Yeah. Like, you're expecting him to die, really, aren't you, the end of Frankenstein? He doesn't. And then, in the second one, I mean, we're spoiling it, but since it did come over 80 years ago, I mean, we're be allowed. In the second one, it ends... Yeah, he's sort of drawn into it. He doesn't really want to do it. But once he's there, he's loving it, isn't he?
Yeah,
once he's there, he's right, in right into it.
Yeah.
Then he kind of, just for no real reason, when the monster's going to blow everyone up, he just sort of tells him to go away and live. And you're like, why? Why? Yeah. Out of all the characters there, why just say him?
That was a little jarring. It was like, you're the highest paid actor. Get out of the room. You must live for the sequel.
I think actually that was an element of Hollywood interference or studio interference where they felt it needed a happy ending.
Yeah.
But that's not like a correct ending though, is it? It's an annoying ending. By forcing the happy ending, it's an unsatisfying ending.
Yeah, hopefully someone has realised it along the way.
Who's come out of the cinema thinking, oh, thank God Frankenstein got away? Yeah, he's horrible. No one's sitting there going, whew, I was really, oh, come on, Frankenstein, get out of this latest scrape. Yeah, he's not a likeable character.
This is true. But then you do have to have some sympathy for him. You know, his wife's been placed in danger and all this kind of stuff.
Well, there's the interesting discussion about whether the films have a perhaps homosexual subtext. Because James Whale, of course, was a gay man. And once you're looking for that, you can sort of see it in the film, especially in the first one, where he's kind of, everything seems to be about the wedding, doesn't it? It's like, oh, I'm supposed to be getting married soon. I have to give this up. You know, it's that kind of thing. Mm. And then the life draws him back in and he doesn't really seem to want to be married. And especially when he's like with his dad. His dad's like, oh, well, one day you'll have some children too. He's like, yeah, it's weird. You can really see the monster representing the kind of, yeah, this is obviously a 1931 film. And yeah, I just suddenly realised I was about to say the monster represents the gayness inside him, which sounds very homophobic. Obviously, I don't mean it that way, but something that he's frightened of, something that, but yet he can't help but be drawn to.
Mm.
And again, it kind of crops up in the second one with the Professor Pretorius, like sort of drawing him back into this life that he should be able to escape. And he's got to get married. He's going to marry this damn girl or make an honest woman of her. But, yeah, there's something there. It doesn't...
It's true. I mean, once you kind of hear about that, you're kind of like, oh, yeah, it does really fit.
Yeah.
You know, it's perhaps not something you'd think of overtly, but once you've introduced to the idea, you're like, yeah, it really, really does fit.
I mean, whether that's just people reading too much into it because James Whale was gay, I don't know. I must be honest, we've not done enough research to know whether James Whale himself had said it's sort of thing he may have said later in life. Of course, darling, it's all about gayness. But you know, that you can definitely make a strong case for that kind of reading.
One of the best things about this film, I think, is the actual sets. I think perhaps even more than the actual kind of acting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The actual sets themselves are astonishingly good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Proper old school mad scientist stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the laboratory, Frankenstein's laboratory in the Watchtower, you reused again in the second one.
Yeah. And of course, reused again in Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
The original set.
I can't believe it was still there, like all those years later.
Well, it was a famous film, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was very impressed. I mean, all those flashing electric things going off. I mean, it looked like the most dangerous set I've ever seen.
You know, when you're there, you can imagine it must have just smelt of fairground rides.
Yeah. burning hair.
But it looks just fantastic,
absolutely,
doesn't it?
Fantastic.
Just lightning bolts flying everywhere, and oh, brilliant.
But not only the laboratory, the other sets as well, like the interior of the Frankenstein mansion.
Yeah.
Just these huge windows and massive fireplaces. It looks amazing.
The watchtower as well. He loves a fire, doesn't he, old James Whale? Because there's quite a few buildings burned down in this.
Everything's on fire. People are on fire.
Moving on from the sets and just to talk about the direction, I actually think, especially the second one, it's fantastically directed. It feels quite modern. There's a good pace to it.
Definitely, yeah. And there's some really stunning scenes as well. The bit where Frankenstein's running through the forest.
Yeah, it looks fantastic.
And the camera's moving along with him. You know, I mean, really, really good.
Actually, I mean, let's talk about a couple of standout scenes. I think a couple of things stick in mind from the first film. One, just when they're after the monster's alive and he's sort of saying, like, they're all talking about it and what they're going to do next. They're like, wait, he's coming up, and you just hear this clonk, 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 clonk up the steps, and in the shadow, and then he emerges from the shadow. I think it's great. Just the sound of just this thing shuffling up the steps.
Yeah.
And you really get a sense, just, I don't know, something about the sound, you really get the sense of it is a corpse walking.
Mm.
I don't know, the way, the sound, the shuffle, I don't know what it is, but a great moment. And the other one from the first film is just the man staggering through the town, clutching his dead.
Oh, that's a powerful scene.
Yeah, and just as everyone's sort of doing a bit of dancing for the wedding, and everyone's having a good time, and slowly everyone sort of notices him and goes quiet. Mm. There's kind of this wave of silence kind of going along with him.
Yeah, and he's just shuffling along, completely in shock, doesn't know what to do. Yeah, that's a really standout scene. I mean, like I said, the first film, there's some really, really great bits, but it's just so slow as a whole, and there's some really long, boring bits in between those really, really good scenes.
Yeah. How about you? Any kind of scenes that really stand out for yourself?
Well, from the second film, definitely the emergence of the bride at the end. That's a great little sequence.
Yeah.
Really good.
It is funny. It's. I mean, it wouldn't be... you can get away with it nowadays. The fact the film's called The Bride of Frankenstein and she literally appears for 3 minutes at the end of the film.
Yeah, she's not in it much.
But you could have made better case for it being called Frankenstein... Minnie the Maid.
Yeah, it's true.
Because she appears in it far more than the bride.
I wonder if she got a spin-off film.
I hope so. But yeah, that is a great and really weird, unnerving performance as well, actually.
Yeah, very
from
good.
Elsa, is that right?
Elvira.
No. I think the actress is called Elsa, who also plays Mary Shelley in the opening sequence.
Nice little nod there, bookending the film.
Yeah, she's quite a cute lady. Quite a very modern look to her.
She looks like Emily Booth.
Well, that's what you said. And also, Emily Booth, I mean, that reference is about 15 years old.
People know who I'm talking about, right?
Definitely they do.
There's horror fans out there.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, Emily. look her up. Not at work. It's great. It's like... I read somewhere that she based it on a swan. The hissing.
Yeah.
Because it's weird, isn't it? It's actually kind of creepy. Like, it's almost like, oh, God, we have brought something back from the dead that we shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
She sort of hisses and screams, like this otherworldly scream as well.
Yeah, it's a really, really good scene. Genuinely unnerving, I think. It could quite easily have gone the other way.
But... Yeah, no, but it's not. It's the way she looks around the room as well. Like, those really sharp, quick... Yeah, such a different to the original monster. The kind of slow, lumbering... Who almost seems human. Mm. Despite the fact she looks more human, she seems less human.
Yes, yeah definitely. Especially because by that point, the monster's, learned to talk and he's kind of developing his emotions, whereas she just seems like some sort of raw... bizarre thing,
something that we've let in from another place that we really shouldn't have done.
Yeah, definitely.
Actually, the whole sort of feel, I guess, of Bride of Frankenstein is so unusual because James Whale pretty much had complete creative control over it. He was begged to do a sequel, and the only way you would do a sequel was to have complete control. And it, and this is a, again one. This should be a feature. Ian's random film comparisons. Because I see this a lot. But this, it actually reminds me of Gremlins and Gremlins 2. Whereas the first film is a kind of, I know obviously the original Gremlins is still a bit of a comedy, but the original Gremlins is quite creepy, a bit odd, and then the only way they could get Joe Dante to do the second one was to basically allow him to do whatever he wanted. So he did a kind of weird, kind of Looney Tunes style horror comedy. And Bride of Frankenstein, in that same way, James Whale, first one, you know, kind of played quite straight. Second one, okay, I'm going to have all sorts of... characters and situations.
It's true. He does let his imagination run wild. It's good. I mean, some of the most awkward bits are perhaps the bits where it's trying to be a bit funny. Particularly with, I think the thing I didn't like it about the most was the fact that the monster, because he's in some scenes where he is quite funny.
Yeah.
Then it's difficult to get the dread back, right? Once you've kind of seen him being funny.
Yeah, true.
It's difficult to then go back to, okay, now he's on.
But maybe that's the whole point, though, because he, as you say, he becomes very human towards the end. Well, under the hero, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. And also a bit more focused under the tutorial of Dr. Pretorius, doesn't he?
Yeah, and of course his blind friend. Loves a cig.
Friend.
Loves a cigar, doesn't he? The old monster.
That's smoke!
That's just quite funny, where he's just having a cigar, listening to the blind beggar or the blind man sort of play his violin, and he's just sort of stomping his finger, going,
smoke, drink.
I wasn't expecting that, I must be honest.
No, that was a nice little touch.
So, would you recommend these films to a young couple on their first date? 2 15-year-olds who are...
On Halloween. I don't think if you were going to see it on a Halloween date that maybe necessarily the woman would leap into your arms for protection.
No.
So in that sense, they're not that scary,
are they?
Second
one is a kind of love story, though.
It's kind
sort
of a love story. They're not scary anymore.
No, not really.
But... they are quite good. The first one, it's a bit slow. Probably wouldn't watch it again.
Yeah.
Has some great scenes, but most of it is pretty boring.
Yeah.
Whereas the second one is much, much better in every single way. So I would definitely recommend the second film, Bride of Frankenstein.
I think I would as well. I mean, to be honest, they recount the whole of Frankenstein in the first minute of the Bride of Frankenstein.
That's weird.
You're very quickly caught up to speed.
Yeah, they just pick show. Yeah, it's weird. They show most of the kind of film. It seems like at the beginning.
Yeah,
it's like they're unused to the idea of sequels.
Yeah, but like people aren't going to remember this. Yeah, so they had to sort of just recreate the plot. Yeah, I think so. I would agree. Basically, Frankenstein is one of those films that people feel they should see. And it's interesting and it's got its moments, but certainly Bride of Frankenstein is actually, a relatively enjoyable hour to watch it. And yeah, just even now, just thinking back, actually a couple of sequences in that I think will sort of stay with me. With the bit where the monster's sort of tied up to a tree stump and he's almost brought up Christ-like as people throw stuff at him.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity.
We should have mentioned that scene.
Yeah, that's a really good bit.
And also just the bit where, the bride... screams and turns him away, and he just starts to cry.
Yeah,
because he's alone.
I'm willing up now.
Yet again, another horror film following on from Let the Right One In, which isn't that scary, but ends on an emotional note.
Okay, next week, House of 1,000 Corpses.
Right, so that brings us to the end of the second ever Halloween special.
You can contact us with your film recommendations by writing to 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at 101films and on Facebook, facebook.com/101films, I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
That's right.
That's how much you do like it. As I said, we will be closing the group soon.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. So move over to the page if you haven't done so already.
And I noticed I was going to tell you off, Lewis, because I put a post saying we're not going to post anything anymore here. And then you, 2 minutes later, posted that week's podcast on the group page. I was like...
People might not have seen it on the page.
Tough.
Anyway, check out our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com.
Yes, excellent. Well, enjoy Halloween. Be safe.
Well, yep, I'm going to try and find my way out of your dungeon.
Yeah, okay.
Or sex attic.
Sex attic, yeah.
Is there
kind of regret saying that now.
Is there a key to this lock?
Yes. There is, and there's one way to get it. Right. Bye, all.
Oh, my God.
Bye.
Bye.